It doesn't work.
Really?
Yeah, it costs an extra $25 to bring in the speakers. We're too cheap.
There's no way to turn it on.
As I said, you can, I'm sure your voice will extend to the back.
No, I'm quiet and humble.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. I am really, really tickled to be with this organization today and to meet some of you. And Bob and I go back a long time. I'm not sure why. But we've had a lot of fun over the years. And you need to understand as I begin my comments that I'm not from the oil patch. So anything that I say that may be strange to you, that's the way it is. I'm not from the patch. Having said that, I've been in the fundraising business and advice business on fundraising since January of 1983. And I never in my life thought I would ever be in fundraising. I always thought it was sort of skunk works. You know, you sort of weasel your way in and ask for money and slink off into the sunset. It is one of the hardest professions that I know of. And just to cover it off, I guess my little company has raised about $230 million. That's a lot of money. And we've raised it for great causes. And I got involved because there was a guy in Calgary, some of you might have known. His name was Ed Poppett. He was the head of Eaton's of Canada for the West. He was vice president. And he came to me, and he was, as his volunteer, he was the chairman of the board of the Alberta Cancer Foundation. He said, "We want to raise $2.9 million. We want you to manage it. Thank you very much." And I said, excuse me, we don't do that stuff. "Well, you're a management company, aren't you?" "Yeah." "So manage." And he left. And we failed in that campaign. Rather than 2.9, we raised 6.9. And I had never seen such excitement in my life as I did with that project because of what it would mean. So in accepting the invitation to come today, let me also begin by saying there are a lot of people who would be much better qualified than me to talk about the center. But in 1999, Don Hunter, who was then chairman of the board of the society, asked me to come and meet with the executive of the Canadian Petroleum Interpretive Center. And I met people like Don Hunt, Dan Claypool, and others, who would take me to supper and question me relentlessly. And if you know Don Hunter, there's cheap, really cheap, and Don Hunter. So we had a very skinny meal, celery, and I recall. Tell him I said that, would you? I want to watch his face. They turned out to be some of the most marvelous people I've ever met. And this project, for me, is the longest standing project that we have been involved in, and one that has gone beyond professional concern. There's personal concern. I really believe in what the center can do for the hydrocarbon industry of Alberta. And I do so because I watch guys like Don and Dan and others contribute their own money. They never asked for a dime until I showed up, of provincial government funding. Not a dime. They did it on their own. Not a dime. They didn't believe in that. And there's a cable tool rig, for instance, up there that's all the money from Don and Dan and others who said, "Let's do this." That's the kind of people they are. So why is this place important? It took me a while to understand that. But think of an 8-year-old boy going into the learning lab, which is what Clint referred to, that was named after Ralph Klein, and I had that done because Ralphie, who worked for me at CFCN, he had a hard time surviving with me at CFCN, let alone becoming mayor and premier. He came to the center one day just to respond to me because I was nagging him to come to the center. And he phoned me and he said, I got a half hour, I'm going out there, spend a half hour, then I'm leaving. Do you understand that? I'll let them know. So he went. He was there a half hour. A week later, he was back and he spent 2.5 hours. And that developed an affection with him. It's like Ron Stevens, when he was member of gaming or minister of gaming, he told me he spent 20 minutes there. He spent 2 hours and 15 minutes there. And the center did achieve $1.4 million in funding from the province. I'm pretty proud of that. But this 8-year-old boy goes into the learning lab at the center. And Jean Visser-Bligan, who is our professional teacher, she asked all the kids in this classroom, and there were 38 of them, and she said, why don't you write down how you get oil out of the ground? And the 8-year-old said, you put a straw on the ground and suck it up to the surface. Well, what do you think of that answer, gentlemen? What do you... It's pretty darn smart, isn't it?
Yeah.
You betcha. He doesn't add that pumps help the straw, that the straw is made of steel, or how far down the straw goes. He doesn't get into all that stuff. He's like a lot of Canadians that think that oil is in a large pool somewhere below the surface. It's a big, black, dark hole with oil in it. Have you met people that think that way? Stick up your hand if that's true. You're still awake. Good, thank you. Questions like that come from school children and adults on a daily basis at the center or outside the center. And if the center is fulfilling its mission, it's helping children, adults, oil field career workers, governments, and tourists understand how to find oil, how to recover it, and how to use it. Oil is a mystery. It's better explained at Canadian Tire than any other source that you could think of. How come we're running out of oil? There's lots of it at Canadian Tire. The Canadian Petroleum Discovery Center is emerging as a major education force in our province and in Canada for all of us. It's an education mecca. And I would ask you to think of that. So how many of you have been there? Those who haven't, would you please now leave, get in your cars and head north. You take the Queen E north and make a left at Highway 19, and by God, eventually you see a sign. As all of you know, there is a truth and fallacy about oil and gas. That evident truth and its fallacies are not going anywhere anytime soon, and you know that. There is nothing being said today about oil that wasn't said in 1914. There's nothing being said about oil today that wasn't said in 1936 in Turner Valley. There's nothing being said about oil today that wasn't said in 1942 when Turner Valley was the largest producing field in Canada. There's always a moment in timing to make everything and anything real or questionable, as members of this society would understand. I have no qualifications to work in the industry, but in my management life, which unfortunately goes back a long time, I am qualified to manage things, to look at strategies and management issues, and I work to raise money for a host of clients using strategies that are honorable and real. My work for the center is a labor of love. And by the way, we changed the name of the place. I asked the society to change the name in 2003, because interpretive center, what does that mean? But if you can talk about discovery in today's world, discover what oil does, what gas does, what hydrocarbons do, that's discovering something terribly important. So for you, a little bit of history, which you may not need, is in order. On February 13th, at about 10 to 4 in the afternoon, there was this gusher. Imperial Oil had invited all kinds of folks that they wanted to surround themselves with out to the site for 8 o'clock in the morning. So you can picture there's nothing out there except this drill rig, and it's, well, it's 10 to 8, there's no Devon. You can't go down to Devon for a cup of coffee. If you want a cup of coffee, the closest place is going to be Leduc. So you've got bankers and investors and moneyed people standing there with their cars shivering, wondering what the hell they're doing there. Can you picture it? Can you picture yourselves there? Holy, it's fun. And what nobody knew is that overnight the rig broke down some and had to be repaired. And oh, by the way, Imperial had drilled in 1946 133 holes that were dry. Now, the drill boss on this occasion was Vern Hunter, who you've all heard the name of, Vernon Dry Hole Hunter. He had a legacy of dry wells in Saskatchewan and Alberta. The difference this time was that instead of drilling down about 3,500 feet, he went down 5,200 feet, a mile below the wheat. 5,130 feet, to be precise. And nobody said he could do it. No one gave permission to do it. He just did it. Because there was a geologist that said, go deeper, there's oil down there. So he took the risk and did it. And he hit this thing called the Devonian Reef. Wow, look at the oil. It was a magic moment. And in that moment, no matter how one looks at it, the face of Alberta and Canada changed forever. It was that signature tipping point that caused a change that, wow, this province has never recovered from it. All of you in this room by vintage would know that to be true. All the things that happen. When you think of a company like Ledcorp, the founder had an old cat and a small truck, built the first service road to look after Leduc 1. Do you think that company's as small today? Yeah, sure. It was a magic moment. And it wouldn't take long. It was about 7 months when Alberta began to record the formation of several hundred companies. Didn't take long. And people like Eric Harvey, who happened to be snooping over the fence to find out what Imperial was doing, would make at least a buck and a half with the land that he owned immediately north and west of the site. Smart man. But it just went that way. And then there was, of course, the small anomaly like Atlantic 3, which leaked for 6 months. And by the way, your favorite hero, Red Adair, came up to put the fire out, couldn't, went home. That story isn't referred to anywhere that I know of, but I gather that's so. But after filling hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gallons of oil that they worked to recover, it eventually would explode in flame. And by the way, that wasn't all bad, because up till then, no one knew that Alberta had oil. But the pictures of that fire would go worldwide. In Egypt, for example, in Cairo, there were pictures of Atlantic 3. London, England, there were pictures of Atlantic 3. In New York, there were pictures of Atlantic 3. It didn't matter very much, but there were pictures of Atlantic 3 in Houston. The curiosity factor began to be exploited. The drill site for Leduc 1 is about 100 yards from the front door of the center. It is a national and provincial historic site, enshrined to make sure that we never forget how important Leduc 1 was and is. A defining moment. There have been a lot of defining moments in the oil and gas industry. Think of 1719, when a Cree Indian chief by the name of Wapasu would hand to a factor of the Hudson Bay Company a vessel containing this mushy, funny stuff. Didn't call it oil, neither did the factor, but this stuff in his hands was bitumen. And how it would happen again in 1749, And still, no one understood or was the name bitumen or oil or any of that stuff. But that's sort of how it began. When you think of Ontario and Petrolia, I remember when I went to Chatham, Ontario to manage a radio station in 1968. About 4 months after that, I met a guy by the name of Gordon Colfitz of Imperial Oil, and Gordon said, why don't you come up and see the original system that we uncovered in Petroleum? What's that? Well, it's oil. Really? So we went there, and the jig lines were still working. The rusty old tanks were still there. There was no museum at that time. There was a couple of decrepit buildings, but really nothing that said in 1856 that part of Canada would change somewhat. I was there 2 years ago as a guest of the museum. The old jig lines are still working, the tank is still being filled, it's as rusty as ever, and there's a museum there. Not a very good one, but it's there. When one thinks of Turner Valley in 1914, thinks of it again in 1924 and in 1936. In particular, in 1942, when Turner Valley was the most prolific area in Canada in providing oil for World War II. In 1920, Norman Wells emerges for a time. Go back to 1942, oil is worth $1.42 a barrel. Isn't that exciting? Alberta as a province was broke. It couldn't manage nor pay its debts. It was the poorest province in the nation, and as you know from your ancestry, would eventually declare bankruptcy. Could not pay any of its bills. The Duke number one helped to change all of that. The boom beginning in 1947 was really on. And again, a word that you know better than I do, boom. And isn't it interesting that boom would be in place until 1960 when that other funny four-letter word came into place? No, not that word, bust. You know better than I that world affairs have always influenced the price and importance of oil and gas. And this again goes back to the legacy of the Duke One. In the early 70s, the Middle East made it clear that the oil beneath their desert sands was theirs, and they would decide how much they would ship and to whom and at what price. And from 1973 to 1980, the demand and the concern over oil was at a frenzy. In 1980, gentlemen, oil was valued in those dollars, those days, at $37.37 per barrel. If you'd like to know the equivalency in 2008 dollars, that's $113 a barrel. Fascinating, isn't it? When we get so absolutely exorcised over an announcement that oil will hit $100. You know better than I that Alberta would feel firsthand the nature of greed, and certainly questionable need, when the feds would dream up the National Energy Program and by November 16th of that year it would be over for a time. And because I was president of the CFC and I knew Peter Lougheed extremely well, still do, we became friends, and he phoned me and he said, yeah, I've never heard him so terse, ever. Can you get me on television tomorrow night? What for? Well, Norman, that goddamn federal government is about to hear some things, and I want it announced on your station for Alberta. So, the good news about being president is that you have to make decisions from time to time, so he said, okay. So he came to the station about 2 in the afternoon, and we shut down Studio A, and we had him do his rehearsals and all that. I didn't know what was being discussed, but he suggested I not go home. So So I sat in the main control room and watched the program, and you know what Peter was like. He was very smooth.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to kill them.
He was so smooth. I mean, he's just the way he was. Marvelous guy. You know better than I that the current opening salvos in the United States that are oil sands produce dirty oil, and the U.S. should be very careful of importing it. Will again cause change in pressures in our industry. The kind of change is not known, but change there will be. In my words, let them eat cake. They got oil, use it. We can sell ours somewhere else. Doesn't hurt. But I sure agree with Stelmach going to Washington to meet with Cheney, the real power behind the U.S. throne. Don't you? After all, he knows oil better than most. In all of that, then, what about the center? In 1986, the Leduc Devon Oilfield Historic Society was formed, and it was then and is now filled with both female and male members of the industry who, in their lives, made the hydrocarbon industry a career. It's not surprising that Don Hunter, his father being, quote, dry hole hunter, is past president and a hugely active member of the society. Today, you look at the guy, he's been past president, he's been a formative character. He's now overseeing the installation of more than 200 new exhibits going into the center. Don grew up in the industry in places like Turner Valley and what would become Devon, and he followed his father's footsteps into the industry. Dan Claypool, past president and treasurer, and certainly a most eloquent spokesman for the center, who I felt should be here today rather than me. Just think of his career. He managed Texaco in the West. He worked on an offshore rig that was troubled and took it over and made it profitable. Gordon McMillan, who worked relentlessly in the field for Imperial, who would become president of the society, still is there every day. And to give you an idea of the character of the guy, here he is president. He felt one of his most important jobs was cutting the grass so that visitors would have a quality experience. You're beginning to understand why I think so highly of this organization and why I believe in our cause. Lynn Dunston, who spent her life managing offices within the industry, now manages the office at the center. And these are just a few of the society's members who are doing so much. The center formally opened in 1997, 50 years after the discovery of Leduc 1. In 2003, again, as I told you, we changed the name. But here's something that's important to you. In the year 2000, attendance to the center was under 10,000. It was about 9580, to be precise. The attendance in 2007 was 32,600. That gives you an indication of the growth, but there's reasons for it. They all center on education. In the past year, more than 11,000 school children came to the center to learn about oil and gas. Hundreds of oil field career workers came to the center for orientation to the industry. Enform, from its training center at NISCU, uses the center for orientation. Lufkin, that you would be familiar with, been around since the very early 1920s, has now declared the center as its national training center. So twice a year, they'll bring in all the mechanics and whatever else they need to do to be at the center, and they gave us a 1937 pump jack to say, you're part of us. I think the other way around, we're now part of them. Redcor on December 12th brought an executive bus line of 50 people to the center because their president felt their people should know more about the industry that they are so involved with. And they spent pretty close to 4 hours at the center just exploring. Deloitte Touche is now bought into the center, made us a major contribution, and they want their senior management people to understand more about oil and gas by going to the center. Imperial Oil This fall brought all of its field managers, some 60 of them, to meet for several days at the center, and they felt it was just an absolutely outstanding thing. We operate a program now in the summer called the Junior Roughneck Camp. And last year, we had 156 kids who put on helmets and safety goggles and enjoyed what it would be like to work in the oil patch. We'll have 180 kids in that program this summer. We had a career fair last September, and we had 1,100 students and oil field workers come to decide what might be a great career, and that was in September. In January of 2003, we created a program called Project Discovery, a campaign to raise $6.4 million to physically expand the center and to add some 225 new exhibits. The private sector thus far, out of a goal of $4 million, has provided $2.6 million. Clearly, if you could get Shell to move, you know, $1 million from them would be pretty good. The Alberta government has provided $1.4 million, and I'm in final discussions with the feds for $1 million. We hope that everybody sees the value of this center. Every once in a while, some brilliant person in Calgary tells me, why couldn't you have built that center in Calgary? And I look at them very quietly and say, well, you know, Le Duc number one didn't happen in Calgary. Did you understand that? So, the NRGM was here and it didn't do all that well. We're pretty pleased with where it is. I hope that those of you who haven't been there will come. I was having lunch with Dan McFadyen, the Deputy Minister of Energy, and I'm looking to that department to provide sustainability money to the center. And he looked at me and he said, you know, there's not a wow factor there, Norm. I don't think we can do that. So I happened to be down in Houston. I went to the Weiss Museum at the Houston Museum of Natural Science, and I saw this thing they call a geovader. You climb in an elevator, before you know it, you've gone below the Earth by 7,400 feet. And visually, all through, there's screens that show little animals and rock and different formations and that stuff called oil. And there's a little fart from time to time, that's gas. And then you go back to the surface. So I said, wow. So we're going to have exactly the same thing at the center, only this one will be 11,200 feet down. It's going to be called the Express. And if Charlie Fisher and I continue to do well, Nexen will sponsor it.
Yes.
It'll be probably the most exciting exhibit that we will have. It's going to cost us about $300,000 to build, but it's worth every nickel. The work of the center has really hardly begun. I went to a place when I was in Houston called Landmark, owned by Halliburton. I need to tell you what it's like to go in and meet this guy, McFarland, who is the executive director of Landmark, which operates a facility called the Real Time Systems. That's where, in Calgary, for instance, at Halliburton, you go in and say, how's the drilling going in Dubai? Bing, 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 the computer, and all of a sudden you're connected to Dubai. Or you're connected to the North Sea, or you're connected to a well site in Texas. Or you're in Nigeria, wherever. Real time. Tells you how the drilling is going, it tells you what the capacities are, tells you all of that. And I went to meet Mr. McFarland and I said, what's the industry going to do about recruiting people to the oil and gas business? He said, what you do is recruit them when they're 13 and 14. What are you talking about? If you want genius in the oil and gas business in the next decade, begin to recruit them when they're 13 and 14, because what you're seeing is advanced technology. The kids already understand because they have computer games. They understand computer games. They understand all this stuff. You old farts don't. I was insulted. Not because I was an old fart, but he was absolutely right. The only thing I know about a computer is how to find the on switch. But boy, has that ever caused me to think. I'm going to end now because the last thing I want to do is bore you. Except to say this. The Canadian Petroleum Discovery Center is not a museum. But it's a historic place where things of great importance in the evolution of the industry are gathered for today and tomorrow to see. Just as importantly, the evolution of the industry is on display there. You are very important to all of that. As gentlemen who have served in the industry, seen its strengths and its shortcomings, it's important that you be part somehow of that center. And I am very honored to have been with you today. Thank you very much.